As the battle raged on with the dreaded Sargligon, and Tulok's life hung in the air and the balance, Izori struck the final blow to the devil. Lump rushed to heal, and Tulok narrowly survived. And as the water receded back into the lake, the Sarklagon's pendant was retrieved, and the heroes began to explore the depths and caverns left behind. Weighing their options with the lake and the magma chamber below, after much deliberation, they decided to return to town for supplies and respite. Lump used the hat of disguise and donned an illusory image of a handsome elf in the armor of the Knights of Lastwall. Izori and Glash decided to stay in the library with me to research more on their ever-persistent foes, while the others sought arrangements for the transport of Lady Gilda's body. Oh, and Lump, for the moment going by Sal, accidentally made a date with Aloria Galantine.
You know, it's been I feel like it's been a hot minute since we had a housekeeping episode, and since pre-Cam's joining of us,
way pre,
the last time we had
way
one.
Pre,
the last level up, I think, and even then that was like barely a housekeeping. It was only a small part of it. We haven't had a proper one in a while, and it feels like we're on the cusp of one. For all I know, we'll pass by it pretty quick.
All right, quick but, level up, and we'll get to housekeeping.
Got me thinking about IRL housekeeping. Not like, you know, when do you sweep your floors and scrub down the counters? As we all know, that's Sunday for James.
2:30 p.m.
Oh, that is also Sunday for me at 4 p.m.
Oh, boy.
I was kind of wondering more about, like, you know, when you have, you suddenly find yourself with a breath of fresh air you weren't really, you know, in life that you weren't expecting. What is one of your go-to, or what are several of your go-to things to spend your day doing with said unexpected free time?
So mine is almost always cleaning something that has been bothering me a little bit, but not enough to give me a dopamine rush from my ADHD to actually do it. And so, like, I just, like, kind of store all of that up, and then just, like, oh yeah, there it is, clean that shit.
Can you give us an example of
I just recently dusted every flat surface in my room on Sunday. Like, just every flat surface got dusted. I'm not
off,
normally a huge dusting person, because I think it's mostly kind of pointless. But when it gets to a certain level, like I said, it's the saving up of the bother. Like, I could see,
it's
like,
about
okay,
one inch thick. You take care of it.
It's 1 centimeter, Freeman. We okay. use metric on this podcast.
That's right.
That's
take that, shots dickhead.
Shots fired.
Suck it, Barn. Oh, I got my first one in.
That's the first two questions on the citizenship test. If you were to encounter Barn, should you tell him to suck it? Yes.
Do you like
no?
metric and also suck it, Barn? Yes. And yes.
It's like those the Wu-Tang shirts where it has like a something and then and, or the ampersand and then another thing and ampersand, another thing and ampersand, but it's just like suck it, Barn, and suck it, Barn, and suck it, Barn, and suck it, Barn.
That's just rude.
But yeah, that's like, I guess that's one of my go-to is just like, I gamify cleaning. And so like, it was just every horizontal service. And so next time, mm-hmm. who knows, I'll get wacky with it and it'll be vertical services. I'll like clean my walls or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So Cam goes a cleaning as a go-to.
I don't understand the question. Were you asking what, like, because you started with like housekeeping.
If you have unexpected free time, what is one of your go-to things that you do? That's all. Because housekeeping episodes for us are unexpected, like get shit done kind of thing. We don't plan for. They just kind of happen organically. That's how I'm connecting it.
Mm.
Thanks for making it weird. Duncan takes a very long nap.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, actually, that's definitely true. I just woke up before this recording because any nap I take is a 2-hour nap. No more, no less.
Whoa, that's just like a mini sleep.
Yeah, yeah, it just fucks my whole week up. So, hey, here we are. No, every but if I do have session. Some free time, I sit down and just like get into music, which has been nice, a good distraction from all the cleaning I should be doing instead. Our Discord members might notice that I'm slowly making my way through Mendelssohn's Songs Without Words, because 49 is way too many songs to tell yourself you're going to learn, but that's where I'm at, and that's my leisure time when I'm not hanging out with you lugs.
Hey!
Fair enough. James, tell us about how you never have surprise free time and what you don't do with it.
That's... I actually have surprise free time all the time.
Lies. Subterfuge.
I always overestimate how long something's going to take me, and I try and overestimate by about a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's like large blocks, like hours blocks, normally it's video games. If it's just like minutes or like supplemental hours, it's either lately I've been picking up my bass again.
Ooh.
But most of the time I just pick up a book and start reading.
Hmm.
Yeah, I've never been interesting. I don't intend to start for this show.
You do things that are interesting to you. That does not have to be interesting to the world. And I think our fans, our small fan base so far has already shown and told us that we're far more interesting than we give ourselves credit for, apparently, because they're interested for some
reason.
They're
lying to you.
I give myself the right amount of credit.
I'm an interested guy.
So in my younger years, and I had extra time, I used to get drunk by myself and clean. That was it. Always made it more fun. But you know, now that I'm an elder, I don't do that anymore. But what I do is play video games, because honestly, I just don't find myself working video games into my routine as much as I used to. And so when I do have a little bit of time, I'm just like, maybe I should pick up God of War Ragnarok. I've been playing it since Christmas. And
I'm a little bit different. I never used to work it into my time. It used to just be a large part of my time. Now I actually do work it in. I'm like, oh, I'm definitely gonna have some free time after we record this or whatever. I'll get an hour in, you know? And I actually give some forethought to that. Where it used to be that I would put everything off just to sit there and play video games for 8 hours. Can't do that anymore. I can't even like sit there and pay attention for 8 hours in a video game anymore. So I just gotta like...
I can barely sit through these episodes in my chair.
I definitely go one way or the other with video games, because it's like either block off a little bit of time or I am going to sit down and waste an entire day and then ignore other responsibilities. Like this weekend, it was kind of rainy and I didn't have much to do. And I was like, oh, I'm going to boot up Cuphead for the first time in a while. And I played all of Cuphead all weekend.
How frustrated were you?
No, I was pretty good with it. You know, it's such a whimsical game and such like a technical achievement just on like a visual level that, you know, enough weed, you're fine.
what about you, Freeman? What are you working?
I've been thinking lately.
Definitely not cleaning. He looks like he's recording this in a construction site.
Yeah, what is that back there?
This is not going to make for good audio. You'll have to cut some of this, but I've been rearranging a little bit so you can see this.
It's two bikes and a crane, it looks like, and maybe a closet.
For the listeners, someone is pouring concrete in the background.
It doesn't look level.
But it doesn't look like they know what they're doing.
That's not decode. Ooh.
Ooh.
It's a green screen, listeners. Or a vert screen.
You could project an image of a clean apartment on that thing.
In fact, you probably should.
That's
what it's
for. Oh, God. So I bought a green screen and it was tremendously larger. I was looking for a wider one than I had, but it was so much larger than I expected. And it's honestly quite wonderful and beautiful. I'm very happy with it, but it took me, I had it sent to work and I was like, I can't take this home on the bicycle.
How did you get it home?
The chef drove it for me. free time. I've been thinking about what James just said. Was I've been playing a little more music lately. I haven't been for a while, but I usually get in spurts and kind of like take some free time, just even if it's 5 or 10 minutes, and pick up the old accordion. But I actually haven't played the keyboard in a long, long time. And so I started kind of rearranging things. I thought I should really sit down and, I don't know, learn how to do a scale for once in my life. but I'm a super creature of habit. I have a tendency to like go to some of the same places for this meet, like breakfast or a quick beer while I work on something for the podcast, or kind of just like pitter around in the same location, the same neighborhood. I'm actually so bad about kind of doing new things that I don't know anything about this city. my go-tos are just sort of the same things every time. Free time, I'll do the thing that I did last week too. I'm not very inventive about it.
There's a whole wide world out there once you open that door.
But I guess one of the things for me is that when I do get to, you know, when I am in that sort of like comfortable go-to habit flow or whatever, that actually helps me become a little more creative. So I do get a reasonable amount of work done. It's kind of been part of my flow the last couple of years now is getting creative work done for the podcast. It's like one of my go-tos. I have sudden spare time. Go work on something creative with the podcast. That's kind of what I do now. Because I don't have a social life. What do you want me to socialize? Well, you want me to be Scoot?
Yeah.
No.
I don't see Scoot killing any of our characters.
That's right.
Directly. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Not directly, yeah.
Ooh.
You never know when Tulok's going to need another skeleton.
I've made mistakes.
Yeah. Well, deep down inside all of us, we have a skeleton.
Yes, that is factually correct. That is,
there was bones correct. Of a joke there.
I'm still waking up. Give me time.
Well, speaking of housekeeping and all that, we have a little short list of things that need to be done that we kind of agreed will happen somewhat off screen. It's a little bit of homework between sessions for this week. We have some goods to sell. We possibly have some gear to upgrade, some math to do on that. There's definitely going to be some research done here, which we'll hopefully expedite the rolls on. There's a little bit of scroll eating for Azori's familiar Sammy as well.
Num num.
However, on top of that, we also have Krukka going to look for a tattoo artist at the Crook's Nook. And we had a lovely, hilarious little interaction with Aloria Galantine and Lump, newly named Sal, and Tulok. And if I recall correctly, they have basically collectively agreed to go have dinner later at the Otari Fishery. Was that right?
Yeah.
Seems to be the go-to spot for you guys. Amongst that, I think was, you know, getting your weapons silvered and stuff, which again is kind of included in the upgrading of gear. Why don't we peel the curtain back first at the Crook's Nook? So we have Krukka wandering up towards the famous sort of club for the Osprey Club, the Thieves Guild, known for its seafood. And Krukka, not having always been known to be the biggest fan of fish, wanders up to the front of this establishment, which is on one of the bridges that crosses the Osprey River that runs through town. And as you do, you get this, you could start to hear, Krukka, that there is a bit more rowdiness happening at this place than usual. Especially given, let's see here, what time of day is it? Yeah, it's like 11 a.m.
Ooh.
So it's...
happy hour. It's,
yeah. It's 11 a.m. and it's the equivalent of a Wednesday. It's definitely not brunch. It's not boozy brunch that you would normally get on the weekend. And as you step closer and closer towards the place, you could hear a real party going on inside. And people stumble out the front door and are having a big old laugh, patting each other on the back as you come close to the front. Do you head on in?
Yeah, he'll stop somebody on the as they're stumbling out. Like, what's the occasion in there? Is there a bachelorette party?
one of the guys just like stumbles and turns and is like, "Whoa, orc dude! Hey, you're the one that lives out in the boonies, right? Ah, good timing, man. Come in, it's wake time. It's wake time."
I am awake, so I guess this is the time. And he
walks. The guy stumbles up around the corner, and you could, like, as you step through the door, you could hear he very quickly has undone his pants and is already urinating all over the place. And someone's like, "Ah, come on, watch it." You step into a rather lively party of lots of locals, but definitely mostly regulars of the Crook's Nook. It's a strange day for it to be happening, but as you step in, you even see Yin Yasbra not behind a door that's hidden like usual, kind of hanging out next to the bar, elbow on the top, and chatting away. And they've kind of pushed all the tables together into one really long table down the center of the room. And as you kind of tiptoe around some of the drunk people, there's dancing and there's people playing instruments in the corner. And you spy at the far end of the table, someone sort of slumped in the chair, head down, seemingly unconscious.
Okay.
I have an idea where this is going, and I don't know how I feel about it.
I'm not sure I do.
Ruh-roh, Shaggy.
He'd like to go up to Yin Yasmira and get her attention.
Okay. So you wander up, and you're not a subtle creature to waltz into a bar like this.
Oh no, he's bumping people with his shoulders pretty much.
Sure,
the
just like
way.
Knocking them aside, and they're like, "Oh, my bad, sorry," because they're all just so drunk. Mm. And as you walk up to Yin Yasmira, she pulls her elbow off the bar and looks at you and says, "Oh, Krukka, it's good to see you." And she picks up a big flagon of mead or what have you and just gives it a big old swig and just gives you a cheeky smile, a little bit cross-eyed.
"Good morning, Yin Yasmira. And I just want to clarify that it is morning right now."
Yes, of course. Yes.
"You are sounding as nebulously foreign as ever."
"Well, thank you very much. Try not to make it too specific now."
"I was looking, I'm looking for an artist, a tattoo artist, maybe. Someone that can do a quick job and maybe hasn't been here all morning."
I've got just the person. Come follow me."
And she grabs you, or tries to grab you by like the lapel on your jacket or something, and just pulls you along. It heads pulls you straight over towards this passed out person at the end of the table, and she just smacks the person in the shoulder.
Says, come on, wake up. We have someone who's looking for a tattoo. come on.
And just smack. And then you can see her hand go behind the back of this person's head and grab it by the hair and just pull the head back. And she's like, come on, Shed. Come on, wake up, you silly boy. And just starts, like, slapping him in the face. Just like, and it is clearly Shad Nunder. Gentle reposed, but dead as can be at the head of the table.
Yikes. Just
having a big old laugh about it.
Christ.
Jeez. That's what I thought.
Seems to be indisposed at the moment. Perhaps there's somebody else.
Oh, come now. Where's your sense of humor, Mr. Rourke guy? Come on. Hey, come. All right, all right. Why do you want that too, anyway?
I had an ex-girlfriend once.
No, didn't wait, we all?
And this is the only way I can forget her.
Well, that seems a little bit counterintuitive.
I didn't reason my way into that relationship. I didn't reason my way out of it. So,
oh, you're speaking right to my heart, Mr. Crocoman. All right, I will introduce you to the tattoo artist, but it is on one condition.
I'm sure I can't wait to hear it.
Kiss the corpse.
Jesus Christ, Scott.
Why is that always what you want me to do?
I was not going there. Scott took it and ran. No, she's like, you have to get the tattoo that we want you to get too. How does that sound?
Sure. The wise man once said, love is blind, so you might as well get a big fucking forehead tattoo.
Oh, no, we wanted to put it on your forehead. But we want it in we want it to be more subtle than that, because we want you to become the newest member of the Osprey Club, where you get the flying bird decorated on you. We have an opening, after all. And she, like, gives Shad another shake.
He looks like he may wake up any moment. I'll get the tattoo, but hold off on the membership.
No, but once you get that tattoo, you will always be a member.
What's in it for you?
Well, just trying to refill out the ranks. And you seem like a good lad.
And she gives you a big old slap in the back that actually, like, jerks you forward a little more than you would expect.
Okay, well, he is going to hope she does not remember this conversation later and just kind of grimacingly give a thumbs up and a, sure.
All right, and she she takes you she starts to, like, wander around the room towards the back and kind of keeps, like, kind of waving her finger at you and, like, weaving in and out of people and keeps waving her finger, even though she's, like, moving barely anywhere. She keeps turning around to wave her finger. You're like, this way, don't get lost. And then she, like, opens a secret panel in the back of the room and steps through. You walk into a room that's just, like, incense just kind of fills the room, and she closes the door, and it's surprisingly quiet once you're on the other side with the door closed. Like, it's been soundproofed in some way. And there's a couple people, like, smoking a hookah in the corner and having a chiller time in here. And sure enough, there's, like, after you go through, like, a curtain on one side of the room, there's a little area where people kind of sitting around hanging out, and someone's, like, doing a stick and poke on someone. She's like,
all right, Cracky here is next, and I mean right now. It needs a tattoo. What do you want to get again?
I think this means serenity, and he'll show her the plan.
And yeah, okay. She takes a look at the design blueprint that you have, and she's kind of looking at it through one eye closed, kind of head bobbling. She's like, 100 victories. This represents your ex-girlfriend?
Yeah. A lot of history there.
100 victories and one big loss, I guess.
All it takes is one.
She sits there. She, like, pulls a chair over and turns it backwards and sits down, and, like, props her arms up in the back. And kind of shoos the other person getting a tattoo away before it's done and gets you to sit down. And the tattoo artist goes to work on giving you this tattoo.
So as they start tattooing away, he wants to ask Yasmira while she's presumably standing there, like, not too steadily.
So, I wasn't too clear. What's the occasion? What has everybody so festive this early in the day?
Oh, well, you know. We at the Osprey Club, we do things our way. The Shad went to help voluntarily down there in the Godlight. But when he came back in the sorry state that he was, they put him in Dawnflower, and, well, they didn't ask us. He was part of our family. Sure, he's part of Otari, but he's part of our family, so we went and got him. And we have been waiting for most of the members to be ready to celebrate his stuff. To his stuff, his contribution to the club.
Was a big help to all of us, and he seems to be a big help to you now.
Yeah, he's a good lad.
As moral support, I guess. Ow, this tattoo hurts.
It's been so long. How long were Shad and Krukka together
they
for?
Never met.
Okay.
Shad died in the room fighting Nakazar and the ghouls before Physic even died.
Like, Krukka met Yin Yasmira when they were going to tell her of his death, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, it's the liveliest really... I've ever seen him.
Yeah. But yeah, they basically, they're just doing what they do, you know? This is their way of celebrating, and they very shadily stole the body from the Dawnflower Library. But ultimately, the town is, like, not too concerned about it. And I think Yin Yasmira seems to know that's the case. All right, well, that basically means as we progress time on the clock here, overall, you will have your 100 victories tattoo. Where to next, I wonder?
Should you roll something to see how well he sits through the tattoo?
A crafting check?
Yeah, maybe,
the tattoo artist actually seems pretty sober.
Oh, but I'm not talking about the tattoo artist. I'm talking about, was Krukka a bitch about it?
Oh.
Yeah, survival.
What do you think? Dunk gonna roll a fortitude save?
Oh, boy. Nat 20.
Hey! Sat like a rock.
Nat 20.
He took the thing and started poking himself a little bit.
Dozed off during part of it.
Yeah. Too good. Amazing. Well, let's take a boo at let's see. Well, we have a lot of the day to spend doing some stuff, and Lump and Tulak are meant to go to dinner, I believe, with Aloria, or at least together. Maybe Aloria will be there later. Yeah. Why don't we just quickly roll through some of our actual housekeeping stuff? I believe Cam, you went ahead and did some math on the old selling front.
I did do some maths, and I think that Lump, just as a knight of Last Wall, is just going to turn to Tulak. I'm going to see about getting all the weapons and armor sold. If you could look after some of the more occult or arcane gear and see if you could find buyers for that, it would be greatly appreciated. I would like to travel with you, but if you just want to take the lead on those, because I'm going to be a little less knowledgeable than you.
Let's go together.
Lump reaches over to hold hands. Scared to be in public for the first time in years.
Tulak says, follow me. We'll head to the blacksmith. Unfortunately, as we told you, Carmen died in the vaults, but it's not known up here, so let's keep it to ourselves.
Of course.
And... Oh, would they go to the... blacksmith, I guess, now? Or would they go to the garrison to sell?
Well, I guess it's probably a little bit of both. You probably sell more at the blacksmith, getting something silvered probably takes longer than a rune transfer, or maybe it's about the same, I guess. But
they're about the same, basically. Yeah.
But either or, you just assume you can sell some there and some the other spot, and probably even some to Rin or some to Morlabint. Like, you'll probably have to spread yourself around.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just as far as sales are concerned here, Lantern of Empty Light, I haven't been using. Though I do want to hold on to all the books. Graves Feast, What the Worm Knows, Secrets of the Skull.
Okay. Is there a reason?
Yeah, because Tulok wouldn't give those up character wise.
Gotcha. Okay.
They were really important early finds, like related to like the mystery of what's happening in Gauntlet.
Okay, so without selling the books, that brings us to a total of 1,080 gold pieces.
And the Word Reaper I want to keep.
Yeah, that was not part of the sell list. That was under potential sell, so.
Then that's that.
Yeah, we have some things that were like a maybe, but.
Yeah, I didn't realize the books had that much sentimental value. Otherwise, I would have not put them up.
Big time!
I'm sorry.
What, Cam, you didn't listen to the show before you joined?
I did listen to the show. I never heard. There's no winning.
My hoarder tendencies are shining through to
I completely support you, and this is completely fine. But yeah, so 1,000 of that immediately goes out to get Lump a sturdy shield moderate rating. And
right, which I believe you all agreed on ordering right away, right, at the Galentine deliveries?
Yes.
Okay. And from there, I think that handles most of our selling of stuff. We had some cool stuff in there, but the Retribution Axe, gone. Cold Iron Shield, gone.
Hmm.
Everything else is just random stuff that Kruk had been hoofing around. A lot around
of plus one weapons and large composite longbows and... so on and so forth. Yeah. Might be easier to go down the list of what we kept at the end of the day. Did you sell the plus one striking battle loot?
Yes. Unfortunately, Lump's hands are not suitable for playing instruments, and so they said it was time to go. I don't know if anybody else in the party had stuff that they would have sent with Lump to sell for them.
Oh, yeah, your own personal inventories.
No.
Yeah. I guess Krukka.
Krukka's got loads of stuff, looks like.
Oh, yeah. And has to get rid of some invested stuff. The tattoo put him to 11. So he's going to get rid of a Ring of Discretion because discretion has never been his strong suit to begin with.
I don't think we ever used it either.
No. But, I mean, all it really does is conceal weapon. Like, we're going on a dungeon dive. Fuck that. Plus one striking hand wraps with mighty blows. They can probably go because real cool dudes use weapons.
Yeah. I mean, those. If you ever lose access to all of your weapons, they could be really useful.
That was sexist and rude towards Lady
but
Gilda.
But they do count as an invested item as well. Or it's like one of the only types of weapon wood. So it has a cost to it in a way.
Yeah, I'm sitting here at 10 out of 10 invested items, and that's after getting rid of the Ring of Discretion, and dang it, I'm going to find something cool and want it later.
Well, you might want to transfer, say, the Striking Rune from that to something else as a backup weapon for sure, right?
Like the Returning Light Hammer?
True.
Yeah, you might want to move the Striking Rune to your Returning Light Hammer, because you use that a lot.
Yes.
And the bracelets of dashing don't seem to be doing you too much good either.
Oh, no.
Krukka did use them recently, though, didn't
he? Actually, yeah, that's true. Bravely running away. But yeah, like, I've got Robe of Cold. I've got my armor. Yeah, okay, so if we want to take if we can spare the gold from selling the ring or whatever to get the rune moved over.
Yeah, we have enough.
Yeah, I think it's like 30 gold to transfer a rune or something like that. It's not expensive.
Yep.
It is 32.5.
So after selling everything and then buying the shield, what did that leave us with in gold, Cam, from that sell?
After transferring the rune over, that would be 80 after the shield purchase, and then minus 32.5 would be... God, I'm so bad at math right now. 47.5.
And that wasn't the only rune transfer, was it?
328 we have in our coffers.
And then Lump would also want to get their Morningstar silvered for 40 gold.
Okay.
If there's anything left over after all that, Tulok could potentially use a pearly white spindle Aeon stone to fit in with the rest of the crew.
Finally.
If we have 60 GP.
Been avoiding that for a long time.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
There's 328 in our coffers of just like hanging out gold.
Yeah, we have 335.5 after my silver weapon and shield. And then, yeah.
And the rune transfer. And that wasn't the only rune transfer, though, right? Was there not someone else wanting to... There was the resilient rune someone had transferred?
That was Krukka's resilient rune. And right. That is counted in already.
Okay, cool. Wow, Krukka's getting an upgrade here. This is crazy.
I'll be the bell of the ball.
Resilient on the Wolfjaw armor. Let's put striking on the returning hammer. And cool. And I want to go ahead and minus off the gold from that Aeon stone.
Yeah.
And delete all the things you need to in the stash. I'll leave that all to you, Cam, if that's okay.
I'm on top of it.
Beautiful.
I assume my spindle will be on order.
No, I think you can. I think you can grab one here.
Oh,
it's low enough level. Yeah, it's low enough level.
You could buy up to, I think, level item level 4 or 5 in Otari.
Usually, I mean, okay.
Unless it's like uncommon or rare.
It's just like, okay.
It's the compass that you're going to have a hard time finding.
There's just a fucking thing that heals you for 1 point every minute. And it's just like, yeah, we just happen to have one in the town of Otari. Like,
yeah, they supply them to the guards when they go out on night shift.
Yeah, they're probably wondering why you didn't buy one sooner.
It's poo. It's poo. OP. I
Scott,
like it.
Scott really hates this item. Scott ever runs to me, it'll be the first thing on my purchase list.
No. That and automatons are fucking out, dude. You're out.
Yeah. In Scott's defense, it is an uncommon item as an Aeon stone.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. Uncommon. All right. Fine. You want to wait 2 days for it, Scott? Is that what you're advocating for?
I'm just trying to play the game. However you want to play. If you want to give it to me now, I'll take it now.
Just take it now, because it just saves us on healing time, which is boring at this point if we don't expedite it. Izori, what's it like hanging out in the library, feeding paper with diagrams on it to your cat?
Well, for Izori, it's a little more complicated than that.
Okay.
You have to mash it in with some fancy feast.
Yeah. Oh, it's fucking rich.
So on the library level, I picture her and Ograil, like Ograil taking her on this little tour of the library level. Like, she's seen every level, but she hasn't really investigated every level. So I like this idea of like Ograil taking her to the little grotto where he first met the crew, and like a little sightseeing tour. And then out a secret door at the back of that grotto above the sofa where we found Ograil is this trail that leads to a small body of water in the southeast corner of the library level. So I imagine her going over there with Ograil, bringing out her expert fishing tackle and just trying to catch a couple of at least edible looking fish, if there's anything left in this pool of water.
At best, you really, I think from a distance you catch the sight of like maybe a small chub or something. But mostly, if you're gonna see anything, it's like a little minnow at best. But it's a very shallow pool, and there isn't much going on there. And
that's all she needs.
Yeah, they come up from the tunnel below, like swimming against or kind of up the slope a bit.
Yeah. So she brings back a few of those for Sammy. And, you know, she's getting to know Ograil in at the same time. I imagine Ograil just, like, crouching at the side of the water like Gollum trying to fish while she's sitting there with her expert tackle.
He's actually idly just, like, you know, dipping his finger in the water, just reading a book the whole time. Just, like, occasionally looking at the water, seeing if there's something to grab. But squat down like Gollum and just perusing some random book.
So after, like, a few hours of fishing, when she catches enough fish, she goes back to the this library central room where the blue light used to shine through, and she takes a single fish and a scroll and muddles them up together, and then that's what she feeds Sammy.
Okay.
So in this way, she's gonna teach Sammy illusory creature.
Okay.
Hypercognition. Mending. Paralyze. Worms repast, which takes about 5 hours. I can just do all of those because they're already scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
But there is inside of one of the books in the party loot, I can't remember which at the moment. Grave Feasts, I think.
Oh no, I think it's is it Ineffable Hauntings or is it the
Threshold? It might be Ineffable Hauntings. But there's the instructions on how to create a scroll of ghostly weapon.
Yeah, I believe that's on Ineffable Hauntings, yeah.
Yeah, so as a witch, one of the things I can do is instead of using my time to learn a spell or craft a scroll, what she does is craft like a facsimile of that scroll and then feeds that to Sammy. That takes an hour, and that I actually have to roll for.
Okay. What's the what are you rolling, and do you have an idea what the DC is?
Yeah, so it's DC 20 to learn this because it's a third level spell. It's also cost 16 gold, which I've removed from my inventory, and I rolled this off air last week, and I got a 20, so it's a meet to beat. Well, nice. It's in the chat, you can see it.
So it is.
Yeah. So she gets the 20, she spends the hour, and she feeds Sammy this facsimile of a scroll of ghostly weapon. So now she's added 5 spells to her spell preparation list, which is great.
Amazing.
Anytime as a witch I can beef that up, it's always going to be better for the party. Especially now that I can just prepare 3 third level paralyze spells.
Paralyze, pretty good spell. Pretty good.
Yeah, it does have the incapacitation trait.
Yeah,
so
it's still pretty good.
The 1-2 punch of paralyze and slow, I think, is going to be that's going to be your third level spells from here on out. Maybe paralyzed at a higher level, depending on how it heightens.
But. So it's just like 2 untruths.
Well, pretty much. It heightens in that the incapacitation goes up. But
Duncan.
Goes up more. Well, I mean, incapacitation
that's enough for
abilities
me.
Are, you know, you usually want to use them not against a single big bad enemy. You know, when you're fighting several enemies, you want to just take one out of the fight, basically, and gimp it so that everything is easier to handle. Because that's what incapacitation bites you in the ass when you're facing like one big bad, and because you know their level's going to be too high, they're automatically going to have a boost up, hit those multiple encounters, those lower level creatures if you can, to really like shine and kind of just dominate.
Yeah, her inspiration for Paralyze specifically was watching that stone mauler, I believe it was called, just like zip around the battlefield. Mm-hmm. So being able to take a creature like that. Like something where its movement is like tantamount to its stat block, being able to take that away.
Yeah.
Even with the incapacitation trait, it's worth the 2-action, 1-spell risk to her. So
yeah,
and to me. So
for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Get it.
When you went into the little cavern there, do you think Glash came with you?
I don't see why he wouldn't. I imagine Glash like working the net as Azori works the rod.
Working the net and dancing.
So.
Cam, could you roll me a D100?
Oh, God. Here we go. That is a 33.
Can I get a perception check from Azori, please?
A gnome's going to get eaten by a giant fish or something, isn't it?
That's a 15 for Azori and a 16 for Sammy.
Okay. So as you're fishing in the cavern, and Augriel is sort of like perusing his book, he happens to look over and kind of splash in the water for a second, looks in, he notices a little movement like in the reflection of the water and turns to look over his shoulder and then pokes you with Zori and is like,
your friend is leaving.
And you catch Glash wandering down the tunnel away from the library and into where the sort of depths would go. And Cam, I want you to roleplay Glash on his attempt to quietly depart into the Darklands and home.
Glash is, for the first time, tired of dancing. This is a serious moment. Fuck you both.
Sorry. I'm so sorry.
And he feels it in his knees. He feels the weight of everything that he's been through. The amount of times that he's been just absolutely smashed by rock elementals and devils and everything else.
Chained up by flesh warps.
Yeah, just everything that is going on in his head, he's just thinking,
I've done everything I can. I think that they'll understand. Maybe I should have said goodbye, but I just, you know, I'm old. I'm older than some of the rocks in here. And it's time for me to go home. It's time to, and just like slowly plodding along barefoot.
I'm picturing Glash like muttering this to himself,
yeah,
aloud but very quietly.
Yeah.
And perhaps with the nudge from Augriel, Azori, you notice and catch some of these words. What does Azori do?
She stays quiet, just watching. You know, he's a druid. This is about as close to nature as they get down here. So initially, she's just assuming that he's doing some sort of commune, like maybe getting in touch with their deity or mm-hmm. what have you. But when he starts to make a break down the corridor, she'll speak up. Oh, down this corridor?
Yeah. The one that you point out it leads to the pavilion where Jaw was. Down here it leads to like fast tunnels.
Okay.
Not that it matters.
Are you sure you know the way? From what I can tell, my friends have rescued you twice now. I don't imagine that it will be a third.
And Glash freezes, hearing Azori's voice like a deer in the headlights. And his shoulders slump down. And you see his head tilt forward, his chin resting on his chest as he turns to Azori.
I can find the way back. I can speak with the stones. I can listen to the moss. Just, I'm sorry. I don't know if I can keep doing this. I feel like I'm holding y'all back. And I want to see my family again before the bleaching takes me.
Your company and your skills have been appreciated by every one of your companions. Be safe, Glashtrumdur. I hope we do not meet again, and that you can find your family swiftly and safely.
He gives a small nod and does like a slow, sad version of the dance he's been doing the entire time, and then turns on his heels and heads further down into the darkness, disappearing.
And I imagine Azori never turned around during this interaction once. She's just feet dangling in the water.
It's like head over the shoulder.
Sammy's turned around. Yeah. Sammy's turned around watching him, and you just see his eyes glowing in the dark.
Trying to mimic the dance.
Glastrumdir disappears into the night.
And that's what Glastrumdir do.
Aww.
And that's where we're going to call it.
The gnomish goodbye.
Yeah.
The gnomish goodbye.
Yeah, I didn't see this coming. I'm feeling pretty sad.
Out of character, I figured that lows were bad. And like, this can absolutely get cut. But I was like, ah, oh, shit. I lost another prepared spellcaster. I had so many ideas.
I was kind of holding on to this one a bit. I was debating it today with my prep. And I was like, well, Glash agreed to stay until they found a route home. And then you guys particularly said, he's going to stay at the library. And then James was like, we're going into the cavern. I was like, holy shit, this lined up, like, not in the way I expected. But there it is. He has been helpful.
I'm not surprised they left. I'm just a little surprised in the way that they left. I felt like Glash would have said something, but I guess not. Mm-hmm.
I was playing with the cards Freeman gave me, all right?
Like, no.
I totally see him pitter-pattering away. Yeah.
I still think the gnomish goodbye is a good fucking episode title.
And Izori's still wearing the Drover's Band, so she is a bitch.
Kraken just freezes mid-tattoo and hears the pitter-pattering of little feet as if going down the corridor.
Oh. Yeah.
Wonderful. Could miss that dancing little gnome.
Uh-oh. He's dancing in our hearts now. Yeah.
And Azori's still wearing the Drover's Bands, so she's not very polite at this
point. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Was she ever polite?
I forgot about that.
Well, and Glash is walking away with the bracers of armor or whatever they are.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
If it gets him home safe, seems like a fair trade.
Yeah, just before James is like, we go fishing, I was literally going to step, like put the braces on, up to AC by one. And then I was like, oh, I guess those are gone now. Never mind. Well,
didn't have any brazers of dancing to give him, so that's all we can give.
True enough. True enough. Do those exist? I'll have him drop them in the tunnel. Braces of devotion, braces of hammers.
Bracers of razzmatazz.
Gloves of jazz hands.
I'm sure there are performance enhancing boots or something.
Since we're in the library, why don't we take a look at some research that James had planned to do with Azori? Did you happen to do a little math on how many research attempts you get in? And do you want to roll some dice on that? And what are you going to research?
A lot of questions.
Yeah.
I did not do the math on how many research attempts I get. Since the spells took 6 hours, I did not know how long they were going to be in town. So if we add on, let's call it 2 hours for fishing, that's an 8-hour day just to get those spells into Sammy.
Okay.
So she's probably got 4, maybe 5 research topics in her.
Okay. Yeah. So fast forwarding, I'm just going to put it to the hour here. Fast forwarding that much time, we come to about 7 at night. From there you can kind of research as many times as you feel is appropriate before you rest for the night, I guess. And it's about 2 hours per research.
Then let's go with 3, I think. 7 okay. plus 6 is 13. Okay, so we'll do 2 then.
You're gonna do 4 hours worth?
Just yeah, because this is, she hasn't rested yet, right? Like, they came to the library, they left. There was no long rest before they left. So, sure. 2 hours will be enough. She's got to be tired by this point.
Yeah. I mean, you could put the rest in wherever you want, really. You could do whatever order you want to. You could have rested first, then fed Sammy, and then, you know, fished. And then
the math is still the same, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. So, all right. What are you researching?
She's going to start with flesh warping.
Okay.
Now that Lump has been introduced to the party, and she's had limited experience maybe smuggling flesh warps out of Geb or out of the Manawace or to the Manawace or what have you. She's just kind of looking for general information at this point, and then down the road, possibly whether or not she can help Lump return to who they used to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So researching that, you've put no time collectively into researching flesh warps. I believe all I gave you was some of the flesh warping tradition stuff when you first discovered some information on it. So you can...
Yeah, we were getting some real hands-on experience with that instead.
You have lots of options here. You can go just in the basic PC recollection of information. You could actually go to the Dawnflower Odd Stories to do some research, or, of course, be in the library here. Do you want to research using the library, or are you going to check your own memory banks first?
Let's use the library. She's here. Like, yeah. She can always use her memory later.
So honestly, for the best, because they're quite rare from your memory banks, it's a harder DC. So in the library, it's a bit easier. So the DC 20, recall knowledge, okay. Occultism, or applicable lore. Sailing lore does not count, before you ask.
Didn't imagine it would. that is a 22 with the plus 3 from Jaffakis and nice. The Sugathi research notes.
Okay, cool. So yeah, that'll get you a point forward. But not to a threshold. And you continue okay. on with flesh warping?
Yeah, she'll do one more flesh okay. warping. And then if she's got time in the morning before people come back, she'll do some Nimbloth.
Yeah. If you want, I can give you a little like review too of like what you would already know from what the party found. Because Azori wasn't here, but could have asked for some information.
I've gone through a research notes okay. in Foundry. Yeah, cool. Yeah, I keep up pretty up to date on it. So that is a 20 with the plus 3 for the
ooh,
second
bang
one.
Bang on. Okay. So I purposely kept the flesh warping a bit light in the fact that it's a sort of, the way I've set up the flesh warping research is it's from the beginning, it's a repeatable kind of threshold of 2 points. For right now, you can choose... from 3 options, Drow flesh warping, Nexian flesh warping, or Thassalonian flesh warping. I can tell you that from the notes from Jaffaki, they appears to be heavily influenced by Drow flesh warping, but definitely takes notes from all 3 famous sources. The Drow flesh warping in particular is the most repeatable one because that is where you can research into specific enemy types, such as Grothluts and Urnicurses and Driders that you would most likely encounter here in the Darklands.
I think she'll do the Nexian one first because that would be where she has experience. So she's got a better idea of where to start that research. So I think okay. that's probably where she started.
Cool. All right. So Nexian flesh warping. So they treat it in the same way as those magical pursuits, basically as a science to be explored clinically and to its maximum potential. Members of the Enopian Flesh Forgers Guild have a saying that embodies their approach. The flesh is frontier. These practitioners believe that, like magical energy, living flesh is a thing to be shaped and studied by those who desire to do so, and students of the science learn much about how to augment their research subjects. While it is tempting to look at Nexian flesh warping as more benevolent than other kinds, its practitioners are very often entirely dispassionate in their practice. Their efforts to make the experience easier on their subjects are motivated by a desire to enhance survivability and produce better results, not because they wish for the process to be innately more humane. Nexian fleshwarpers who express either untoward cruelty or unnecessary compassion are derided by their peers and accused of letting their emotions taint their work. They see their work as one of improvement, taking ordinary impoverished or convicted Nexians and transforming them into powerful warriors to defend the nation. Many of these subjects are volunteers who know that the pain of transformation can grant them greater power, respect, and opportunities. Fleshwarpers who work in Nexus laboratories prefer to be called flesh forgers, which they feel differentiates them from what they see as the casual barbarism of Drow flesh warping. Most are impressed with the variety of shapes and transformations that Drow can produce the flesh warping, but feel that Drow waste potential by embedding needless pain, misery, and cruelty into the process. While Drow flesh warping labs are almost indistinguishable from torture chambers, Nexian flesh forges resemble laboratories with detailed diagrams and progress charts to illustrate their procedures, and frequently host lectures and demonstrations for students or interested experts in other fields. You can see how you can see the connection with Jaffeke's notes of the Drow and the Nexian, because it wasn't like a horrible place. It was more like a laboratory, but it was definitely dispassionate. There were diagrams, but you could see that.
I think this is probably what puts her onto the concept of Drow flesh warping. So when she goes down that road, she's already discovered that it exists.
For sure. So Nexian flesh forgers aren't directed by Hajenti's malevolent designs. For the most part, though, cults of Hajenti and Yamasoth are present in Nex just as they are anywhere else. They have thus made advances in directions the Drow would consider foolish or even useless. Nex's best flesh forgers have made great strides in reducing the physical and mental trauma of the transformation process and improving the rate of survival. And numerous flesh forgers are fascinated by the Sinspawn creation of ancient Thassalon. Some actively collect historical and modern records of Thassalonian rune wells, hoping to discover the metaphysical quote-unquote blueprints used to create Sinspawn. None have yet made any significant progress. The most talented and well-known flesh forgers work in Enopion, the a city of alchemists in the heart of Nex. The Enopion Flesh Forges is a collaborative guild whose members share advances with one another. The guild's primary focus is designing and shaping flesh-forged soldiers for the state, which members excel at. The soldiers are toughened warriors who are often highly regarded for their abilities. However, not all flesh-forgers in Enopion support this militaristic effort, those who would independently have more freedom but lack the collaborative support of the guild. As many flesh-forgers in the city are also aristocrats or politicians, the choice of whether to join the guild often has multiple facets and is bound up in old rivalries. Several pioneers have emerged from Enopian's flesh-forges. Mari Finitek is a gnome researcher who is pioneering the use of flesh grafting to repair battlefield injuries to keep flesh-forged soldiers in the fight longer, although claims she's fabricated her research results are just coming to light. There's also known to be Jamal Cobrin, who has determined how to subtly augment the musculature of his vast flesh-forged soldiers, dramatically improving their strength without telltale visual signs. Meanwhile, Zane Faltrazan has been finding novel ways to apply flesh-forging to undead creatures, potentially heralding new breakthroughs. Some of these latter ones you can see, again, influencing Jaffeke's notes, possibly tying them, without maybe a little more research, possibly tying them to what makes Lump a more unique flesh warp than what you've seen so far. But that's it.
Okay. Yeah. A lot of info. She's happy with that.
That was two attempts, 4 hours later. Are you going to call it there?
So that'll put her around 11 p.m. So, yeah, she's going to do an eight-hour rest at this point, and then we'll see where the boys in Lump are at after that.
I believe with spending the day in Otari doing some shopping and some selling and some rune transferring and all that, I think, Scott, you wanted Tulok to do some research as well. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Oh, tell me more.
Tell me more about devils.
Devils, okay. I don't have a particular spread of research dedicated to devils like I do with some of the other stuff. So tell me what you're looking for exactly.
Tulok's trying to see if there's like loopholes or any historically, if anyone's kind of, you know, turned the tides on a devil as far as contracts are concerned. Just like when they're dealing with Eurevian, he has some ideas in his pocket of how he can potentially navigate the situation.
Sure. Okay, so you could probably hit up the Dawnflower Library for that particular thing. And we're going to have you roll a religion check. I'm not sure how kosher that is for you.
It's mid.
And yeah, okay. That's not too bad. Mid's fine. And we'll say you're looking specifically into Phistopheles's contract devils, and infernal contracts and sort of the connection thereof. Why don't you... I don't believe you have an appropriate lore for this, so why don't you go ahead and roll me a religion check?
Yikes.
Not looking good?
I use a hero point. That was a natural one.
Okay.
And that's a 9 on the die for a 20.
Okay, no, that'll do it. That's going to be a meat to beat for what we're looking at. Same with Zori's. Let's see. How much time do you want to spend researching, by the way? If we consider these to be 2 hours each as well, how much time do you want to spend on that? You have most of the day, realistically.
Yeah, I mean, I think that although we're doing it in this order,
I think that once Lump gets rid of all the arcane and occult items, they'll just look over it to look. If you have any other business, I can handle the selling of these weapons and armor.
Tulok was a little hesitant about leaving Lump and or Sal on their own, just because they haven't been out of the Abomination Vaults in God knows how long, and just, I don't know, Tulok is still getting used to how he thinks Lump is going to act in public and in the vaults. Like, they have shown themselves to be loyal, but like also...
You had a really awkward interaction with Aloria that you had to sort of save them from in a bit, in a way.
I mean, and they turned on their... I mean, they were their oppressors and the people keeping them there, but like, I think Tulok is still slightly wary. So if Lump tells Tulok that they are going to go take care of the weapons, Tulok is going to sneak away a little begrudgingly and spend 2 hours doing that, but then is going to meet back up with them and will begin studying more at night after.
Okay. All right. So you're going to kind of more wait till after dinner, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. Lump seems to have volunteered to go on their own, but, you know, if Tulok's a little cautious, how does Lump feel about, you know, kind of having this cautious guardian almost?
I don't know that Lump would notice if Tulok was doing this, because in Lump's mind, I think that they might not even notice, because they don't understand the wariness. Like, they understand they're strange and peculiar in terms of physical appearance, but they think they've won over the hearts and minds of the party, and so would not think anything of it if, like, they just told Tulok, hey, go do what you got to do. I can handle selling this. I know how to talk to guards. I'm from Lastwall. Mm-hmm. I know what a guard is. I know how soldiers talk and things. And so I think unless...
Roll warfare lore to make an impression.
Yeah, pretty much. Kind of thing, right? I do have warfare lore.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah. I think that unless Lump noticed Tulok coming back and being sneaky about watching Lump, Lump wouldn't think anything of it. But if Lump did notice Tulok kind of lurking in the shadows, like observing them, it would probably be devastating.
Sure. I want to clarify that it wouldn't be like that. It's not a secretive, he's not putting on invisibility and following Lump around.
It would be more like Tulok just declines the offer and says, no, it's just hanging out for the day. It makes it like socially casual kind of thing.
Yeah, like showing them around or introducing them to people that they see in the streets, you know, because people are going to be walking up. Like, at this point, Otari is, you know, on max alert, probably, other than the fact that there's a drunken wake going on. Just random people walking through the town are going to be a little bit raising eyebrows. So this person who looks like a warrior is going to be getting a lot of questions. So Tulok is going to be with them walking around.
No, I mean, like, Otari has been doing its best to keep life going, you know, and they can't afford not to. They have to keep working the lumber yard and the forest, and they have to keep fishing, and they have to keep, you know, the status quo going. And yeah, extra effort's gone into like maybe fortifying some of the edges of town, and there's more guards around, and people are on edge. There's definitely a level of anxiety happening. But, you know, it's not even just watching some new armored person come through. That armored person is with Tulok. Tulok is the only original surviving hero of Otari. So it would be kind of like rolling up going, Tulok, introduce us to your new friend, not who's that? I'm going to ask them questions, you know? And Tulok's like, you know, kind of locally famous in a way. And you would get a lot of that.
Bitch, I better be.
Oh God, it's going to his head.
Good. It should.
Okay, I had a question.
What is the sun? Yeah, sure.
How far away would Tulok think we are from the month being up since the first wave?
Let me double check. It is the 10th of Lamashan, and the first day or the first attack?
The attack.
The attack on the graveyard?
Yeah, essentially how long away does he think the next one would be?
Right. Okay. So, you are pretty much exactly a month from the day you first set out, which puts you at about, 4 days away from a month from the attack on the graveyard. So it's the 10th. It would happen on the 14th if it were to happen exactly a month away.
Cause this is on. We know that it's a month away to recharge, don't we?
You know that it can only do it once a month. You don't know it's like progress and recharge or anything like that. You just know that it's no sooner than a month apart.
So Tulok is, this is just, I just want to say this so listeners know that this is on Tulok's mind, whether they're in town selling stuff, studying, researching, going out for dinner, whatever. This is at the forefront of his mind every second they aren't in the vaults.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Always the concern for the well-being of the town. Especially if something were to happen when you're not there. You've been, if anything, lucky enough so far to have been there when these things went down. And maybe Tulok considers that to be nothing more than, especially as a fortune teller, nothing but actual luck, not, you know, not really, so we're looking for, not fortune. What's the thing that disappeared when, not actual fate or anything?
Prophecy.
Prophecy, thank you. But yeah, as you spend the day kind of roaming around town, probably meeting and introducing and shaking some hands, although maybe a little bit warily for Lump. You eventually head down to the Otari fishery around the time that they start to set up the games and hand the snacks out. And, you know, you can feel that sort of anxious energy amongst the town throughout the day. But you also feel it's sort of relaxed a little bit as you witness everyone sort of go out of their way to try and very much relax if they can. And you pop yourselves down at a table. And Tamily happily serves you some fresh beverages and some snacks. Anything in particular you want to eat or drink?
Mug of beer.
Mug of beer?
Reminder for Cam. Tamily, what is her relation to the town?
She is the owner of the Otari fishery.
Yeah.
Owner and proprietor. Yeah. So she basically, yeah... oversees the place. The fishery itself turns into a games room and kind of like restaurant at night every night. Okay. Basically at sundown she transfers over, so people go in, they play cards, they play dominoes, they play you know, all sorts of things, mostly snacks, not like full like dinner menu kind of thing. It's very well known for like the fishers gathering there early in the day to have coffee and breakfast as well, and it's just an all-around kind of casual fun joint, but without getting, doesn't get rowdy, doesn't get like booze, doesn't usually get too booze heavy or party, although we did see Carmen Rajani in here quite drunk one time.
Okay. Can I roll a, because I, isn't Tamily part of the Great Corsairs? That was kind of what I was fishing at.
Oh yeah, yeah, she is. In fact, you see her ever since the night of what I'm now calling the night of the Howling Moon. When she marched out onto the pier to defend her fishers from all the wolves attacking, She had her regalia on, and her peg leg was wrapped up in the ribbons of the colors of the Great Corsairs, the Andorran army, which I believe are blue and gold or blue and yellow, if memory serves. If that's the case, it is, she has yet to change her peg leg ribbons since. She's been constantly wearing those colors ever since. Not that Lump would know that per se, but, is definitely a very notable part of her regalia right now. So I guess you could roll maybe a society check. Maybe she's wearing like a little bit of more iconography as well on her casual clothes, yeah, like a pendant or something.
Would it be warfare or society?
I think warfare. You could do warfare. If, okay. Either one. Yeah.
Rolled a 15.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be quite enough. Something is nagging at your head a bit, but it's okay. Been so far past for Lump that it's like you feel like you know it, but you can't quite pinpoint it. Maybe you want to ask, but maybe you want to just think about it more.
I think as we walk in, Lump will kind of notice the heraldry and the dressing up of the peg leg, and just kind of stop in front of her, come to a relaxed attention. She'd be like, hello, my name is Sal. I am visiting the town, and kind of like panics for a brief moment as they're like, oh God, why did I start this yeah. conversation? Waiting for Tulok, like glancing nervously at Tulok.
And Tulok notices the apprehension on Sal and kind of claps them on the shoulder and says, Tamley, this is our new companion. We found them in the vaults, a prisoner, and we've been working with them down there to move deeper, you know, on our quest.
Sal visibly relaxes.
You see a range of emotions go across Tamley's face. At first, it's like a little bit of amused confusion with Sal's like poor attempt at saying hello, I'm so and so, and then it's a sort of happiness to hear, oh, a new companion for the heroes, and then it's like we found them down there, and it's like, oh shit, like not quite sure if definitely a flash of maybe can I trust this person right out of the gate. Tulok's vouching for them, but holy shit, but also like what could possibly happen to have this person be found down there. And you're presenting as an elf, right?
An elf dressed in older style last wall plate.
Yeah, I think she kind of goes through all of these motions and before you, not really hiding any of them. And then she kind of looks at your armor and just says, what on earth is a soldier of Lastwall doing down there?
It's a fairly long story. And by that, I mean the story has taken place over a number of years longer than you've likely been alive. The best way I can describe it was that the soldiers and knights of Lastwall are on a perpetual crusade to bring about the demise of the undead. And
yes, I'm quite familiar actually with the mission of the Lastwall.
Oh, did you serve?
I served in my own way. And she like kind of taps her peg like tonk tonk. Maybe not for Lastwall and maybe not for destroying the undead, but in my way.
And Sal will take off their prosthetic arm and just I did as well, and then put it back on.
And she like kind of gives you a wink. And that's when the, you know, the room's kind of like side-eyeing a little bit, kind of looking at this kind of conversation, especially at the thud-thud, and then you pull off your prosthetic.
Kunk, kunk, yeah.
yeah, and it's like, you know, but, you know, everyone kind of shrugs it off a little bit, like, oh, okay, we know it's, you know, it's no, not too big a deal. It's just, you know, a little eye-catching. And then that's when the door opens the front, and Tamlee says, oh, Eloria, please come in. Have you met Sal? He's one of Tulok's new friends. They were just about to tell me a wonderful story. Would you like to hear it? And she gathers all of you to sit down at a table to listen to any tales that Sal would like to regale. And I think that's where we'll call it.
Stemming the Tide is an actual play podcast of the Adventure Path Abomination Vaults and is produced by the Uncharted North Network. Stemming the Tide uses trademarks and or copyrights owned by Paizo Inc., used under Paizo's community use policy. We are expressly prohibited from charging you to use or access this content. Stemming the Tide is not published, endorsed, or specifically approved by Paizo. For more information about Paizo Inc. and Paizo products, visit paizo.com. Music is composed by Will Savino and artwork by Greyhood. Stemming the Tide is recorded remotely using Foundry Virtual Tabletop. If you wish to connect with us or support this project and projects to come, we can be found at unchartednorth.ca, patreon.com/unchartednorth, and on all major social media platforms. Links to all credits can be found in the episode description and our website. Thanks for tuning in.